Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Hello, and welcome everybody to another episode of Pod Strickland. I'm your host, Shwinny Poo, in this episode 415. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Stacey. That is at StaceyPine89 on Twitter. Stacey, how are you doing?
Doing pretty well. It's way too hot, but...
It is way too hot, but we will get there. Hopefully, we'll all survive this heat wave that apparently is unrelenting. But nobody wants to care about the heat because you know what? Everybody's dealing with it. So we'll get to that. We will not get to that. Actually, we will not talk about that beyond this. We will talk about the Knicks. We will talk about basketball. And before we do that, I do have to make a few announcements. First, we know that Strickland has an Instagram. Check that out. That is at the Strickland line on Instagram. We are posting all kinds of new content on there. The Strickland also has a YouTube channel where you may be watching this podcast. If you are not done so already, please hit like, subscribe to the channel, leave a comment. That'd be a huge help to us. Strickland also has merchandise, which you can find on our website at www.strick.land. There's a link that'll take you to the merchandise store. There's all kinds of cool stuff on there. T-shirts, sweatshirts, hats, coffee mugs, water bottles, you name it, we've got it. And Strickland has a Patreon, which you can subscribe to. There are a number of different tiers. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to Pod Strickland, this podcast that I always say on Friday at Prez. You also get access to Take From Obvious Bozos, our news podcast that is hosted by Andrew Steele, a.k.a. Doug, along with Zach Blatter, and you get access to Strickland Discord with the conversation never stops. There are further tiers. There's a $9 tier that gets you access to Strickland Roll, my solo potter. I rant around about the next game more. You also got access to wonderful premium articles by Matthew Moreno, one of the best in the business, who's been churning out content like crazy. And you get access to Strickland NFL, which you guessed it is our podcast that is about the NFL that is hosted by Constantine Metricos. There are further tiers. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and $100 tier. This comes a variety of additional benefits. I listen on podcasting, merchandise discounts, and even potentially co-hosting a podcast alongside yours truly one day, whether you choose to subscribe or not. None of this would be possible without you. And none of this would be possible without Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, right to all the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every matchup, and even live odds, mobile games are being played. When the game is over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker. Unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo like Believe, BLEAV, for your 50% free bet credit on your first deposit up to $250. Bet Online. It's here. The Knicks still do not have a established backup center, I guess is maybe the best way to put it. Mr. Robinson still
on. You don't think Jericho Sims is established?
He's established as not being a backup center. So they have Mitch Robinson still on the roster. They have Julius Randle, who has played center at various points in his career, but not very much at all with the Knicks. Jericho Sims was mentioned, who is not the center. Precious Chua remains an unsigned free agent right now, which is curious, and I wonder what the Knicks are up to. And they also have drafted Ariel Hakpurdy, who is on a two-way contract. There has been some rumors going around that they have interest in Karl Anthony Towns, or that Karl Anthony Towns would be of interest to them. That's obviously something that's been going on for years, that has picked up some steam again lately. You know, I guess my question to you would be, what do you think, like... I mean, interpreting how they're going about these things, how do you, like, I mean, what do you make of this? Because they made a big deal about getting space up to the second apron. So they're hard capped now at the second apron instead of the first apron. That gives them an extra 11, 12 million in space. And since they finalized the Mikal Bridges deal, they've done nothing, really. I mean, they signed Tyler Kolek and they signed Pacome Dadier to the roster on their rookie deals. And then they, you know, they gave Ariel Huck-Porty a two-way. We still don't know what's going on with McCullough. They also haven't released the Summer League schedule yet, which is interesting to me, especially because they haven't signed McCullough in any way. Not a two-way, not a contract, not anything. My understanding is in this scenario where he's not signed, you're still able to trade his rights immediately. You don't need to wait the 30 or 60 days or whatever it is that you can for rookies. So I find all of this interesting, to say the least, because this is not a team that has generally operated without contingencies and plans to the plans. I mean, are you worried? Are you concerned? Is your interest piqued, your curiosity piqued by what may be happening behind the scenes here?
I mean, with the center market the way it is, it's a little surprising Precious hasn't been signed yet. He outplayed Paul Reed in the playoffs, and Paul Reed got signed. Paul Reed, longer track record of, you know, consistent good play. He's a good player. I'm not that series shouldn't overweight that, but but I think the fact that he hasn't been signed is the biggest thing to me, where they have these options they're exploring. And I would imagine Precious Chua has gone through some instability in his career. You know, when I say that, I don't mean him personally. I mean, you know, started out in Miami, they were developing him well, moved to Toronto, his role changed, shifted between multiple roles, you know, couldn't really carve out consistent play. And then he comes to New York and he really seemed to find his niche here, especially as a small ball five. And even the 4 minutes haven't been good, but it is an option, right? You can go to, he showed that it's, if not viable, at least something you can eat some minutes with. And he's from New York. So I think that the fact he hasn't signed yet tells me, I'm sure the interest is out there. And, you know, maybe during this COD we'll get a Woj bomb or something. But I think that tells me that they've probably said, we will take care of you one way or the other, and your offers will still be there, but we are looking at other options and we need to delay signing you to do that. Same with McCullough. But I think really the big thing is that Precious is not only not signed by the Knicks, but not signed by anyone. And they're exploring all options, right? And I think, you know, however much we like one or the other, all of their merits, all have their demerits. And I think they're weighing the costs of that. And, you know, we've known this front office to do all their due diligence. So, you know, it's not so much trust Leon as just like, it all adds up to that, right? I don't think the Leon asleep meme, I don't think that's really applicable here.
Yeah, no, I don't think that he's just sitting around doing nothing, if that was your question.
Yeah, no, that was not my question. My question is, but to answer your question, I would say it seems like I think that they have kind of this, let's call it a safety school option, right? Bring back Precious, roll with Mitch.
Like Michigan State.
Ooh, that's a tough one there.
A little banter if there's any Sparties watching. Just got to get those digs in when I can.
Yeah. Sorry, Hermanito. You know, it's more they have this solid plan in place. You can bring back Precious. Mitch has the health. I'm personally not concerned about much more than the health issues. I know you have more concerns on the spacing and those things with Hartenstein versus Mitch. This is a team that was very successful with Mitch. We haven't seen Mitch get to play with OG and Randall together. But given the results, even Randall's personal stats go down with Mitch on the floor, but
the team offensive rating is still very high because Brunson is a magician, all of that. But I think they're probably like, we can definitely roll with just Mitch and Precious, right? I think the consternation I might have is, why haven't you just locked up Precious yet? The fact that he hasn't signed anywhere else tells me that they have kept that contingency plan in place. But they're exploring other options. I think they're going to sign Precious no matter what, to be honest. But can you get a Walker Kessler? Can you get a Cat? Can, you know, Nick Richards, right? Are there other options? There could be something out of nowhere, you know, an international guy or something that we haven't even thought about. They are keeping those options alive given this delicate cap situation. But I do think my gut feeling, I don't have any sources. My gut feeling is their like base option right now is just bring back Precious and roll with it. And they have bought themselves enough time to explore. Is there more we can do?
Yeah. So I'm not sure that they're guaranteed to bring back Precious. I think they probably have some level of understanding with him. I'll put it this way. I think if they bring him back, they probably have an understanding that they will pay him more than he has offers on the table from anywhere else, which is fine for the Knicks because they can pay him more using their bird rights on him. They'll still be under the second apron. His salary will help them aggregate potentially in season. And yeah, that's it. It just costs them money really more than anything. And I think if they trade him, they will trade him at a number that might even be higher than what they would bring him back at. And I think he's open to that, presumably because the team trading for him would be trading for him to play him, actually, to give him an opportunity. And also, hey, look, this is not a guy who's necessarily cashed in a lot of money, at least in terms of, you know, relative to the NBA. And, you know, getting paid when you can is not a bad gig, as our famous once a Nick, always a Nick alumni, Shake Milton, will tell you. So I'm not sure that they're 100% going to bring him back. I do feel pretty confident that they have an understanding with him that they will, again, either bring him back or use him in a sign-in trade. Either way, I think he will be getting paid more than whatever is available to him from other teams on the market. So that's what I think is the holdup there. Now, what could they be working on? I don't know. I think there's been a lot of... This is what I think. I'll just throw out my... Not even what I think. I'll do my shout out to Uncle Bill Simmons, Conspiracy Bill. This is what I think. There's been a lot of rumors about the Knicks' interest in Walker Kessler, right? That we've heard about that. We've also heard about the Knicks' interest in Nick Richards potentially. There was a report from Stefan Bondi, I think a week ago, where he said he viewed Precious more as a power forward than a five, which I find interesting. That might be Tibbs
viewed him as more support than a five.
That's what was said in the piece. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's accurate. He might have a preference. He might not. We don't know.
What was the? I can pull it up. Sorry.
We have now heard some smoke from CP. I think from Alan Hahn and from Begley that the Knicks could or might still have.
Did he say Tibbs actually prefers Precious as a four?
Yes, that's what he said, dude. Yes.
I'm not questioning you. I'm saying Bondi will sometimes infer that or will add his own.
He's claiming it as sourced in the piece. I don't know that that's it is. Very, I mean, I'm assuming it's some kind of sourced thing, but who knows who his source is.
Precious was awful at the four. That's not a...
Yeah, his source lineup, could be the fucking water guy.
There's no reason with this team to play the four. Adam Sandler?
Yes, it could be Adam Sandler. The Knicks have been now rumored by Begley and Hahn and I forgot who, fuck, and CP the franchise of Knicks Fan TV. So we have these various reports about Cat. So we don't, I mean, we'll take that for what it is, okay? We don't know. If you want to say those are not well-sourced or you don't trust them, that's fair. I understand that. But just keep that in the back of your mind. We also know Julius Randle is extension eligible. Julius Randle cannot sign that extension for another month, I believe. I think it's August 2nd or something along those lines. But I'm sure they're having a conversation with them, or they've had conversations with them leading up to this about, hey, you know, this is what we would offer. This is what might be on the table, et cetera, et cetera. And amidst all that, they have also gave OG Anunoby a 4-year or 5-year, $212.5 million contract, which puts them at around $42.5 million per year on average. Obviously, we know that the number starts lower and goes higher with the various raises. I'm just telling you what the average is. I wonder if all this stuff is coming to a head, because I don't think they want. I think they might be willing to pay Julius his max extension right now, which would be like 4 years, $181.5 million. I think they would be willing to do that right now, given where salaries are going. I think they would still be under the second apron if they do that next summer. It might be a little tight, but they should be fine there. And they don't have to worry about that anymore. That's taken care of. It's his salaries on the books, and they can deal with that when they want to deal with it. They can use it in trades, as they would still be under the second apron. That now makes him a player they can aggregate potentially. I mean, he can be a player you aggregate either way. So they have that to deal with. And I'm wondering if Julius doesn't necessarily want to extend, because he might look at the OG con. And if they're trying to get him to take less than his max, I don't think he would. I don't think he will take that, because I think he'll look at the OG contract and be like, I'm better than OG. I don't care what anybody, I'm not saying that's what I think. I'm not saying, you know, in a vacuum, sure, I think OG is a more valuable player. I bet you he has more value around the league, 100%, even at the money that they're both on. I don't even think it matters. Like, I think OG is 100% a more valuable asset, commodity, player, however the fuck you want to put it, than Julius Randle is in the NBA, based on what teams would give up for him or how teams would view them. And that doesn't matter to Julius, obviously. Julius views himself, and rightfully so, he views himself as a better player. So why am I, as a better player, why would I take a pay cut? And if anything, if I'm taking the max right now, I'm doing you a favor. Because if I go to free agency next year, I can get a 5-year deal. I would be eligible for the 10-year, 35% big max. That would start at something around 50 plus million a year. I'm not saying that a team would be out there for him to necessarily give him that, but I think it's fair for him to think, well, maybe I won't get the 50, but surely if I have another good year, let's say I make another all-star team, I make another all-NBA team. Now I'm a 4-time all-star. I'm a 3-time all-NBA guy. And if I have a good playoffs, then fucking forget about it. Like I'm getting the max then. Then I'm going to get my max. So, but because I want to be in New York, and because I love the organization, I trust you guys, I'm willing to take the max you're putting on the table in front of me now. Would he do that? I don't know. I think it's questionable. If I'm him, you have to put yourself in Julius' shoes. Sure. For us, it's easy to be like, well, he's taking a big risk. The guy has sucked ass in the playoffs both times he's gone there. But if you're him, you probably have confidence in your own game, in your ability, right? Hey, no, I don't. I mean, yeah, it sucked the first few times, but I'm going to be fine this time. I'm going to be great this time, actually, because the team is better. I'm better. Like, this is going to be fantastic. I'm going to go to the playoffs, dominate, and make myself more money than I would have gotten if I extend right now. And then if you're the Knicks, you're like, well, do I want to do this? Like, do I want to play out the year? I don't have control of them. Once you get past this kind of extension window here, where, you know, if it becomes apparent he's not going to take it, well, then at that point, he's an expiring contract heading into unrestricted free agency. And I'm not saying that all of a sudden there's going to be this huge market that develops for him, but you never know how that shit works. You don't. You no longer have control over that situation. And even if you bring him back, you're almost definitely, again, I mean, definitely if he has a good playoffs, going to pay him more than what he would have been available for this summer, potentially, if he would extend. But that's a tough place to be as a front office. And so I think that's a situation that's just difficult to navigate, because he's the weirdest really good player in the league, because he's really good, but he's this 4 who can't really play the 5 unless you have these very specific circumstances, which maybe the Knicks can create now with the roster they have. And then you have the fact that we saw this team without Julius Randle. And I know that it's not the same thing because Hartenstein was starting and blah, blah. And, you know, I get all that. But we saw what this team looked like without Julius Randle. And do I think the Knicks need another shot creator? Yeah. Do I think that that shot creator has to be Julius Randle? No. And do I think that maybe a different type of shot creator could be more valuable? Potentially. Now, do I think that that shot creator that is 100% going to be more reliable, more effective, that I want to lock into for the foreseeable future is Karl Anthony Towns? No, I don't. I'm the biggest Karl Anthony Towns hater, doubter, whatever you want to call me. I'm all those things.
You're more of a dog guy than a cat guy.
Yes, definitely. But I don't feel strongly about going out and getting Karl Anthony Towns. But I think the Knicks might. The Knicks might, because they might be like, you know what? If Randle wants to play this out and he wants to go to unrestricted free agency and then he wants to look at a contract that could start at $50 million a year, then there really isn't that much of a difference between his contract and Karl Anthony Towns contract beyond this upcoming season. And if they looked at the playoffs and their takeaway was, well, we don't necessarily need our four to be this bulldozing, you know, whirling dervish in the paint who can dominate down their shore. But, you know, a lot of the value that we saw from him this past season was creating high value kick out threes. That has value, but we saw that Brunson without him can actually pick up a shit ton of the creation workload. And if we replace him with Karl Anthony Towns, well, this is just me speaking. I don't know how the front office think about it. Well, I don't necessarily think that Karl Anthony Towns can create, especially not three-point jumpers, high-value three-point jumpers from the corner at the level that Randle can.
But he's still that's not going away, right? Like, he's still drawing doubles in the post.
I was getting to that. So he maybe doesn't do that, but he still commands attention from defenses, to your point, when he's in the post, when he's, you know, in the paint, whatever. He's going to command attention. He's going to create those openings too. Obviously, it'd be up to him to capitalize. He's been a decent passer, comparable to Julius, if not better at times. So that's, you're still getting that element. And this is a guy who is now, like you can say safely, is established as a 40% plus level three-point shooter in the NBA. And whatever...
Is he the best big man shooter of all time?
Probably not. Whatever Julius is, it's not that. Julius has a lot of things offensively, but he is never going to be that. He is not that. And then you come to the piece that we've all kind of been like, well, you know, if they're not getting a center, are they going to go to Randle at the five? I have a lot of reservations about Randle at the five. Even with OG, even with Mikal Bridges, even with the guys that we have on our roster, I have a lot of worries about how that stacks up defensively. I also feel like that's not really like a true five out look. Randle is, he has gravity. There's a lot of metrics that show this, that he has plenty of gravity. So this is not a guy you can totally ignore. But he's also not a guy who, if you ignore and you kick it out to him for three in situations where he's off ball, that he's 100% going to just let it rip from out there. And quite honestly, that might not be the best thing for him because he's a very streaky three-point shooter throughout his career, especially in his New York career. And so if you're the Knicks, maybe you're like, well, if we're going to do this, we want to have a four who we can nominally use at the five in certain lineups, is Karl Anthony Towns better given all of the context of all these other things? And I wonder if the stuff about Nick Richards and the stuff about Walker Kessler is them, because the reality of this is if you're doing this trade, Randle would go out and Mitchell Robinson would have to go out. I'm not saying they would necessarily go to Minnesota. God knows why the fuck Minnesota would want Mitchell Robinson, given they have Rudy Gobert and Naz Reid already. But they would be the outgoing pieces. So the Knicks would then need to, even if you love Karl Anthony Towns' ability to play the five, that's not going to be his full-time look. I guarantee that. Tom Thibodeau is still your coach. So I wonder if the Kessler thing and the Richard stuff is about them seeing, hey, what if we had to rope this team into a trade? What if we had to rope that team into a trade? And Precious still being out there is part of all of this, I think, because they are not sure. They don't necessarily know yet what they are doing. So I'm not sure anything happens. I think there's a pretty decent chance nothing happens, that they bring back Randall, they bring back Precious, and this is more or less our roster going into the year. They'll sign somebody.
They're keeping those other options open, though.
Yeah.
Exploring them.
Well, right now, for right now. But then they still have the TPMLE, the taxpayer mid-level, and they can sign another piece going into the season, and that's our roster. I think that's still a pretty decent chance, because when you start
talking about... Would you say that is the plurality chance or the most likely outcome?
I would say yes. Right now, I would still say yes, because the math and the mechanics of a Carl Anthony Towns trade is not easy for the Knicks. And obviously, they moved a lot of draft capital out when they went and got Mikal Bridges. So they have to kind of thread a needle to get that done. And I have no intel saying that they are trying to get this done, but I find all of that very interesting, where, like, again, I don't know why you would work so hard to get space up to the second apron. And we all were like, all right, great. So now they can re-sign Precious and, you know, easy stuff. This is all, but he's still out there. And it's
also aren't a lot of great options at TP for the taxpayer mid-level exception, right? And if this is the year you want to go for it, you know, maybe that doesn't move the needle as much as, to your point, some of the other options that open up.
Well, I don't know what their plan is. I have no idea what is happening. I just think there's way too much. And I will say this. I really think this Randall thing is a way more volatile situation than people think. Like, I'm not saying that they hate him or he has beef with the organization or anything like that.
But it's business.
Yeah, it's hey, man, like, how do we feel? Like, you've watched Along Came Polly?
Yeah.
You know, at the end, when, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman is subs in for Ben Stiller and he's like trying to make the case for why they should insure the fucking psycho guy who just keeps doing crazy stunts. It's like, you just got to fucking believe it at some times. And, like, with Julius Randle, there's a lot of fucking really good things about him, obviously. But we've done this for so many years, obviously. And I feel it sucks that we did not get to see him last year, at least be able to finish out the year with that version of that team. That sucks. But if you're the Knicks, it's like, we can love Julius. We can appreciate Julius maybe more than any other team in the NBA. But we have now made a pretty big move in for Mikal Bridges. And we have established ourselves as a team that should have aspirations beyond winning a round in the playoffs, you know, getting home court in the first round. Like, we have aspirations beyond that. You have to be a little bit more cutthroat. And do you feel good about... One, the question is, do you feel good about giving Julius Randle this summer a 4-year, $181.5 million extension that would kick in after this upcoming season? So that would kick in his age 31 season, right? 31, 32, 33, 34. That's how long that extension would take you. If you are okay with that, fine. That's wonderful, but that does not mean Julius Randle is okay with that. Julius Randle may... come to the conclusion, hey, I am worth more on the open market, because look at what, like, if Tobias Harris is getting $26 million a year, what the fuck am I getting? What am I worth? If Isaiah Hartenstein, like, again, there are people that'll tell you Hartenstein is more valuable than Julius Randle. I'm not here to debate that, but I guarantee you one thing. Julius Randle would never, never, ever, 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 ever say Isaiah Hartenstein is better than me. He's a more valuable player than me. There's no way he believes that. He believes he's better than him, like, without question. He believes he's better than OG Anunoby, without question. He believes he's better than all these. He believes he's a star, an all-star, and for good reason. Because he's
to be clear, it's not an arrogance thing. It's, he has the numbers to back that up.
He's been an all-star. He's been a two-time All-NBA player. Like, he has perfectly valid reasons to believe this. And they're not unsubstantiated. They're not delusional. They're real. And so if you're him... he could be like, cool, I'm happy you guys are showing me that you value me enough to offer me the most amount of money that you can offer me right now, but I'm going to play it out. And it's like, do you want to take that risk if you're the Knicks? Especially if, like, if you get Brunson to take this extension that he might be considering, I mean, he's giving you flexibility, which then you could, like, you would maybe be... like, using to just bring back Julius at a higher number next summer than you want to. Like, I don't know. To me, there's a lot going on here. I have thought that from the moment that OG, I thought the OG number, whatever it was going to be, was going to be very significant as far as Julius Randle's negotiations with the team. And I have a very, I know that, yes, 4 181.5 is actually higher on average than OG's number that he got. It's not that much higher. And I don't know that Julius Randle will happily take that. I think there's actually a pretty decent chance he doesn't. And I think there's even a chance the Knicks might be like, we don't actually feel great about you on that number. We want to offer you 4 160. And he could be like, fuck you. I'm going to free agency then. So I don't know. I think there's a lot going on there, and all of it's tied together. That's what I don't think these are separate issues. I think the Randle thing is directly tied to this weird situation that's going on right now where we don't know why we don't, like, why have we not signed Precious Chua? That seemed like a no-brainer, right? Yeah, we did our big move. Mikal Bridges, great. Knicks made their big move. I don't know that they're done. I think that they might be hunting for another big move, and if there is one out there, I'm sure that I'm sure they would kick the tires on Karl Anthony Towns if it became apparent to them that he was available. Not saying they'd do it. Again, the cap mechanics are difficult. We don't know how Minnesota values him. I'm not necessarily sure what Minnesota exactly wants for him. But I'm sure they would kick the tires and keep that possibility open if they're something they're willing to pursue. So I don't know. I think there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the question we've been asking for 4 years, right? It's, is Randle the viable second creator? That's it, right? And the subpart to that is he a viable second creator if you have enough ancillary pseudo creators, I'll use that word, in guys like Bridges, in a guy like OG even, right? OG, we saw him show more stuff off the dribble. Obviously, he has a co-star in Brunson. But that's the question you have to answer. And it's, do you believe in it? It's a lot of believing, to your point. And I think they're keeping their options open, you know. I think the Cat thing is like, are they gonna make a trade for Cat or are they not? It's Schrodinger's Cat. You don't you can think of them being interested and not being interested, because this is how they've always operated. They've always, I mean, for the longest time, you wanted them to commit to a specific direction. And not you, all Knicks fans, and me as well. Like, you get that certainty, but also it seemed like they were always towing the line between the younger players and going for it, right? Developing the younger players was something they obviously prioritized in the early part of this rebuild, but they also had a really good team. How do you balance that? They made that choice. They, you know, they still have Deuce, and, you know, their players are still pretty young, but they traded IQ and RJ, who are their, you know, two of their best young assets, to get a guy who helped them immediately become a contender. So you have to understand, like, they are, and I don't know that they were biased towards one option or the other. I think that they were going to take it one day at a time and at every point evaluate what was going to get them to their eventual goal. And I think Randle is that next inflection point. Do you make the bet that Randle in the playoffs can be something like Cat? Honestly, can he give you, like, somebody posted Cat's stats today. He's 19 points in the playoffs on 35% three-point shooting. Not going to blow you away. If Julius Randle gives you that with the current roster, that team can win the championship. So, you know, they always are going to keep their options open. There's definitely things going on, but I think, you know, a skill of this front office is that relationship management and making sure that everyone is, I think, probably transparency as well with kind of, hey, this is what we're trying to do. Give us this time, we'll figure it out. And I think that's what's going on right now. And the extension plays into it. I don't know what's going to happen with that. To your point, I think Julius Randle probably wants to be paid like an all-star. I think he's also going to have to look and say, you know, if he wants to be paid like that next summer, who out there is giving him that, right? I mean, there are candidates, right? I would love to see. I mean, I think Julius Randle would be awesome next to Victor Wembanyama. But is that the best way for San Antonio to spend the resources? I would love to see him in I honestly thought of Knicks players, he would have been a better target than Isaiah Hartenstein. Obviously, Hartenstein was available, but there are options. But the market is just not, he is not viewed the way that his accolades would suggest.
Well, his archetype is weird. This has like always been this is not, for better or worse, or however you feel about it, Zion is viewed as a superior talent. I always has been. And his peaks, in my opinion, are higher than Julius Randle's peaks. Obviously, Zion has played like fucking, you know, 7 games in his career. So it's a weird thing. But the fundamental issue with these guys is their bread and butter is playing inside the arc, bully ball stuff in the paint. That's great. I mean, Zion's great at it. Randle's really fucking good at it. You know, whatever. The problem is that they can't defend at the 5. They can't defend full-time at the 5. And in a lot of cases, Julius Randle has not really demonstrated. I mean, forgetting his lack of willingness to defend hard all the time, he also just has some limitations defensively. And if you're going to play him at the 5, like the only reason why now I think a lot of us Knicks fans are viewing this as a much more palatable thing is because of the personnel we have available on the roster now. Where it's like, okay, well, you have OG, you have Mikal Bridges, like,
and look what it took to get that roster around him. Right? It wasn't easy,
right? So it's like,
and by the way, you need another creator because he cannot be Jokic is not the best defender, but he can be your guy,
and he can also spread the floor out. And he's like he's a better defender than
Julius. These are the things you need to make the Randle context work. You need someone to protect the rim because he won't do that. You need other good help defenders around him. But all the way, oh, by the way, they need to space the floor as well. And you also need another creator. And the creator that they found is a mega star. But that is a whole lot of context to build around a guy.
Well, and it's, and also, like, if you want to go 5 out, you have to make 2 choices. Either you use Randle, I know there's been a debate of like, well, actually be OG at the 5. We all know what the fuck we're talking about, okay? We don't need, like...
And OG's not going to be a center-level rim protector. Yeah, like, let's not kid ourselves. And you lose him as a help. That's like a, you know, passing lane guy.
It's also just annoying to me because I'm like, we all know what the fuck we're talking about here. Like, we don't need, like... Well, actually, it'd be OG at the 5. Like, shut up, dude. We know what we're talking about.
Just line up, yeah.
Yeah, we all get it. So, like, that's... So, if you want to go 5 out... Right, you need these amazing wing defenders who can make it happen. But the other thing is, Randle himself is not like this lights out 3-point shooter. So you're not really going 5 out. You're basically opening up, and I'm not saying this, and I do think it'd be very potent, don't get me wrong, but you're basically just opening up the opportunity for Randle to have the paint open and maybe be used more as a role man at times, which doesn't
exist.
You're
also opening up, they're not going to leave him open. So right. You're also opening up the paint for Jalen.
Well, he's not going to be open. But he's also going to be the guy that, like, they help off of.
But it won't. I would argue that he has more 3-point gravity than like Josh Hart. So
yeah, no, he. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, for sure.
I mean, the numbers may not suggest that, but
I think the numbers would. I mean, every gravity number.
He has the volume. Yeah, he has the volume. So yeah. And they're not going to leave. Like, no one leaves him open. Like, people close out on Julius Randle.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. So I want. Yeah. So there's that. And then it's like, well, then the other way you do it is then you have to get the most rare archetype of player. Which is like basically, you know, Kristaps or Brook Lopez or one of these centers who's a credible rim protector, but also has true gravity beyond the 3-point line and can hit that shit at volume.
And by the way, he's not even that great a rebounder. So, like, even a guy like Jaren Jackson is one of those rare types, it becomes a little problematic.
Yeah, well, Jaren Jackson is, he makes fucking Randle look like Moses Malone.
No, but my point is that if that was your solution, right, which it isn't, because of how rare that, even if he's the poor man version of that archetype, he's such a, like, he's not, Randle's not a good enough rebounder to, like, make Jaren Jackson work next to him.
Right. It's like, it's like Jokic works, like, he's good enough defensively in large part because he's just an amazing defensive rebounder. Like, that's a huge reason why he's consistently been graded out as, like, an average or above average defender, is that there's just value in, like, well, look, I'm not going to stop a lot of buckets, but every time they miss a shot, I'm going to get the rebound. That there's a ton of value.
And he's there. He eats space in a way that Randle just
he's bigger, probably has, I'm sure he has a greater wingspan, and he's just more active with his hands than Randle.
Got more girth?
Yes. I mean, Jokic is, he's a fucking,
his monster. Girth is very impressive, huh?
Yes. Sure. It impresses me. But so it's like, I don't know. Like, I just think it's not unreasonable if you look at all of this stuff we're talking about, and if you're the front office and you're like, well, look, on top of this, we have to give this guy a new contract. We have to commit to him. And let's say for some reason, Karl-Anthony Towns would be interested in leaving Minnesota, or if Minnesota look, their roster, I know it's cool that they want to say that the money doesn't matter as long as we're competing. We've seen enough with the second apron and just the history of sports owners. Like, they can say that stuff, but the money always matters at some point. And given the limitations that exist, and they have more money accelerating out of their books, Jaden McDaniels' extension kicks in this upcoming season. That wasn't even there. They're just a lot. Anthony Edwards' extension kicks in this year. I believe Mike Conley has an extension that kicks in this year. Rob Dillingham, they basically just acquired that pick without sending out any salary. So I think that accelerated something like, I think that's going to cost him like $60 million or something next year, just between his salary and the tax payment alone. Like, you know, that's a lot of money. And, you know, they might be like, well, why do we, like, we don't need Cat. We got Cat at home, right? And they can just point at Naz Reid. Like, so they might be interested in, look, maybe we can't dump his money off our books entirely this season, but maybe for them, it's like, you know, let's see.
They also tried to sell the team, right? So
yeah. Well, like, but they could be like, well, let's look at Randle. Let's take Randle on expiring doesn't concern us, because if he plays really well, great. We'll cross the Rubicon when we get there. But like, we don't need to worry about that right now. We have not invaded Italy officially. We're still good on this side. But like, if you're, and so for them, they're like, okay, that's fine. But we know we're off of this. Well, I think it's like a 4-year, $220 million that Cat has coming up starting next season. We don't have that obligation anymore. And let's just say for some reason, they're like, you know, we would love to have Randle and Mitchell Robinson back for Karl-Anthony Towns. We don't need a third team involved. We'll figure out the salary some other way. We're not worried about that. We'll make that happen. They could be like, well, we could probably just trade Mitch next year into somebody's cap space if need be. It's a good center on a descending contract. His contract's gonna be cheaper next year, both in terms of its value and as a percentage of the cap. Somebody will easily take this for a year. Take a shot on Mitchell Robinson for 1 year. You want to do that? Like, they can move that. So they can look at this and be like, this will keep us competitive for next year, but we're not really on the hook for these guys after this season. And we internally think between Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels and whoever the fuck, that we're more than okay. Like, even if we don't retain those guys, we're okay. Even without Cat, we're okay because we have Naz Reid. Naz Reid, by the way, a guy, he has a player option for 2025-26. I don't think he's going to pick that one up. Like, I wouldn't pick that up from him. Like, he's had a fucking phenomenal couple of years. He won Sixth Man of the Year this past season. He shoots the three ball.
That'd be next summer, right?
Yes. Like, I mean, it's not, Naz Reid is like, credibly, you could look at him and be like, you're giving us something between like 85 to 90% of Karl-Anthony Towns. And I mean, look, the 10 to 15% that he's not giving you, that's the premium you end up paying for top end talent. But like, maybe they think it's higher. Maybe he's in 90%. Maybe he's 95% of what Karl-Anthony Towns gives them. And like, if that's the difference and the salary is just, you know, it's fucking crazy, the difference there, but you know, you're going to have to pay him in a year. Might be better to just get out of the money now. So I just think there's something there. And I think the Knicks could view this as like, Cat can play the four, right? So we can trade for Cat and then we go fucking trade for Nick Richards or Precious comes back or whatever you do there. Cat can play the four there. And then now we have a guy who maybe we feel better at the five than Randall, and a guy who's locked in, so we don't have to worry about any negotiation down the line. And I'll lay the argument out for Cat at the five being better than Randall at the five. I don't really feel strongly about this because I don't really
care. Well, he's 7 feet tall. It starts there.
Yeah, he's 7 feet tall, allegedly. He's kind of like, not really 7 feet tall, but whatever. He's 7 feet tall.
Okay, Omar.
Yeah, he's not. He's not. There's enough pictures of him next to guys where you're like, no, you're not 7 feet tall.
So what are you putting him, 6'10", 6'11"?
Something like that.
He's center side.
He's center side.
Randall is undersized for
a center. And his wingspan is also significantly greater, whatever. He gives you an actual five-out look. Like, because he is truly, you can't leave him. Like, you cannot actually, teams don't scheme to be like, the guy we're going to help off of is Cat, right? That just doesn't happen. They're not going to do that. He's too good of a shooter. We just talked about it. Randall might be the guy that you help off of. Even if you have to close out to him fast, he's the guy you're initially helping off of in a lot of cases in those lineups. You're not going to have that with Cat. And I would say the defense is at best a wash, and at worst, like, you know, it, at best, it's an improvement. At worst, it's a wash. I can't see a worst case. And I can't see Cat being worse.
What does Randall do better? Randall is better. Randall can switch under perimeter players. I think.
I think Cat can actually do that pretty okay. But I think his biggest
Randall thing is actually good at it. The Randall is our best defender against Trae Young in that
series. I think Cat's actually pretty bad. Like, I think Randall's defensive rebounding, while poor at times, to me, I've seen him get more tough rebounds than Cat consistently. So, like, that would be my main thing. I'd be like, that's the thing he can do. Even the switch stuff, like, I actually think
Cat matters is okay. Against Boston, right? I think Randall is actually good in space when he doesn't have to incorporate what other people are doing. Put him. I would say this: I would trust him. I won't, like, in a team concept, he's still probably he's still definitely a worse defensive option than Mitchell Robinson. But if we play Boston tomorrow, just if I'm worried about Kristaps Porzingis, I would rather have Randall on him than Mitch, even though Mitch is a better defender in other.
Oh yeah.
So, like, I'm not sure I would say that about Cat quite, right? Because there's a real mobility difference there. It's just he doesn't utilize it for anything else besides switching and on ball defense.
Yeah. I mean, so that would be the one thing. But I think Cat, who is not a good defender, is better at most every other element of defense.
And it's improved. He has there's a trajectory there.
I would also say his effort is more consistent. Like, it's not consistent. So, like, I want to be very clear. I'm not trying to, like, gas up the, like, Carl. Mobile. Actually, Carl Anthony Towns is, like, he just competes.
So Cat well. Has that dog in him.
Yeah, he's just a dog. No, I'm not saying that, but he's more consistent, I think, in his effort on that end of the floor than Julius. And he does have, whatever you think about his player performance, again, I feel really disgusting doing this because I don't actually want Cat, and I'd prefer to just run it back. It just feels like there's stuff coming to a head that people aren't talking about. And it all ties back. And I think that is a reason they could be looking at trading Julius, even though people think that's not a possibility. So yeah, like I don't know. The Cat thing is interesting to me because I don't know. Watching that playoffs, watching the team, how they played without Randall, it's not insane to look at that and be like, well, what if we just, like, kept adding shooting? What if we just kept adding shooting and got more versatile in how we can line up in the front court? And their reasoning for that could very well be like, let's just, like, we have to beat Boston at some point, and not just, like, copying them all the way, but being able to throw a lineup at them that is credibly five out as well, you know, that gives us an opportunity. Because I'll say this, you put Brunson in a true five out look like that.
Well, that's,
I would take him to capitalize on that and elevate the offense over anybody Boston has. He is a better shot creator than anybody Boston has. He is a better offensive centerpiece than anybody Boston has.
What about Derek White? He got selected for the Olympic team over him.
I don't know why anybody's mad about that. I actually think he's, like, awesome.
No, I'm happy about that.
Yeah,
Brunson, I think he's do your podcast.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
spend time with your wife and do not
get
healthy.
I agree. I'm happy Brunson's not going, but two, I'm just like, he's actually kind of like perfect to have on that team. Like low usage guys just going to do all the dirty work unlike everybody else. Like, perfect. Anyway, I just like, to me, Brunson's a better offensive centerpiece. And if you're going to be Boston, you're either going to have to out. I don't think you can out defend them. I think they're too well constructed defensively. You cannot out defend them. I'm not saying you punt on defense, but the way you're going to beat them is to just have so much talent offensively that you're giving them problems. And for whatever flaws Indiana has as a team, I thought Indiana gave them real problems offensively. Like, I did not think that series, I know it was a 4-0 sweep, but I think
the game was close and Halliburton was hurt.
And it was also just like a talent issue. Like, Boston has more talent. So, cool. I'm not saying it's going to work, but if you told me, hey, the Knicks would have in this theoretical scenario, they would still have Brunson, DiVincenzo, OG, Mikal, Hart, Deuce, Nick Richards,
figured out his pronunciation yet?
Pacome Dadier. And somebody they signed on the taxpayer mid-level exception who's reasonable, whatever. Like, you know, I wouldn't totally dismiss it. I would still feel not great about the center thing. But if you're going to go for it offensively, like, it's not insane. The main thing is losing Mitch on top of Julius. Like, that's an issue because you lose your starting four and starting five. I like Nick Richards. I'm not ready to risk like saying, oh yeah, Nick Richards is an awesome starting five, or Precious Achiuwa is an awesome starting five. I'm not really there with either of them. So that's a big
word on Precious, but go ahead.
Yeah.
Awesome is a strong word. Actually, a lot of people do believe in Nick Richards. I will not pretend to have watched the Hornets, but a lot of people do believe in that, but go ahead.
It's just, yeah, I mean, I like Nick Richards actually quite a bit, but again, I don't, yeah, but it's like, I just because I like him doesn't mean I'm going to be like, yeah, dude, he can be what Mitchell Robinson is. Like, that's crazy.
But are you trying to replace, and here's the other thing.
You're trying to replace the aggregate, not the specific players, right?
And I think part of it, I think there's, when we're trying to interpret the Knicks front office, do we think they want to, like, if they're interested in Walker Kessler or Nick Richards or another five, or Cat, right? Is that because they want to shift to this? Because there, I can view that one side that, like, you just say, look at Brunson. Nobody can guard him one-on-one. Who the fuck is guarding him in five out with Cat? With, I know there's people like Mikal Bridges, three-point volume isn't high. You're not helping off of Mikal Bridges. You're not helping off of OG, even above the break. He proved that in the playoffs, right? He was hitting threes above the break. A lineup with Jalen Brunson that is truly five out is unguardable, period. That, I would put the over-under on that offensive rating at 140. Seriously, if with Randall, right? If you had that starting lineup, Brunson, Dante, OG, Mikal, and Randall, I would put that offensive rating at 140. Maybe you can get even higher than that with Cat. That is not a guard. Like, you are basically hoping Brunson misses one-on-one mid-range jumpers, which, good luck. With no help, with no threat of help, good luck. Like, he's hitting 60% on that. I'm not saying he has, but, like, there is always the threat of help. So his options have been in the 50s, but he complements with everything. You can't help on those. You cannot help on the, when he has someone in that, in the cage, in that area, in that 10 to 20 foot range, you're done. I think he's hitting 60% if you really have a five out lineup. That's in addition to everything else he does. But there's also the point that you brought up is, like, even if you're like, we still want a rim protector, we want to keep this identity, right? We want a traditional center who can block shots, offensive rebound. Mitch isn't that guy because of the health issues. is he a long-term center? It's not his age.
No, it's durability.
And so,
if you had to bet money, which way the front office is leaning? Let's say they're like, let's say you knew for sure Mitch was going to be here for this entire upcoming season. How much would which way would you bet the front office is leaning towards extending him or moving him for something next summer when he's an expiring?
If they knew he'd play 82 games, or well, they're going to play 98. So, but that's what you're asking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they would extend him.
But what if he's like his normal injury stuff crops up again?
You can't, right? Or not at the same number. And not what a team like Detroit would probably give him.
And at that point, you already have to know with some certainty, like we love Mitch, but he's not a starting center.
And so, not because of his talent
right.
or his impact. He's not there enough. And
it's the Robert Williams.
And Boston thing. Made the yeah, that was what I was gonna say. Yeah, like it's the same calculation.
It is kind of funny they traded him for effectively like they kind of swapped him out for Porzingis, who also has like consistent injury issues.
Yeah, but you get a lot more.
Yeah.
Like you cannot be the limitations that those guys have, and Robert Williams is less limited than Mitch offensively. You know, not in terms of the shooting, but can actually dribble and do things with the ball. I mean, I think the thing that no one talks about with Mitch is that his like if it's not a dunk or an uncontested layup, he's bad. And then on top of that, so that's if he doesn't get a foul call. Even if he gets a foul call, you have a 41% chance of him making a shot. That is essentially like him shooting 41% on a layup, right? Because you know you get two attempts. So it's pretty there's a lot there where it's like with Mitch and Randall. So with Randall, you have the like the thing is this, right? With Randall, our concerns are. You can't like Mitch is so limiting, and this is what we talked about before. Yeah, like Hartenstein helps. I'm not going to deny that, but if you can't be effective next to Mitchell Robinson, then the offense is still really effective. It was like a 2-point difference in offensive rating. It's just a very specific context needed for him, and with Mitch, it's the injuries. That's the big thing. But it's also like to your point, I think it's great to bring up Porzingis because it's like, okay, but there aren't really any weaknesses with Porzingis. Probably not a guy you want to switch on the perimeter, not now. I actually wish the Knicks did it more when he was here because I actually loved his mobility at that point. You know, not an elite rebounder, but he allows you to play five out. He is a good offensive rebounder. He can like make functional reads off the short roll, right? When you don't have that, in addition to the health concerns, that becomes a big concern. So I guess my question and what I'm wondering is this center foray that the Knicks may or may not be making. There's so many may or may nots, right? May or may not, maybe Leon Rose's middle name, but there's so many may or may nots. This foray they may or may not be making, is that because they may or may not want to lean into Brunson five out? Or is that because they may or may not believe that Mitchell Robinson can actually be the guy, whether for injury concerns or just the limitations of his game, to win you a championship? Or is it because they're a very diligent front office and they do everything? And it's enough to frankly drive us hyper focused fans mad. I tell you,
I just think this is abnormal though. Like their thing in free agency has been, they usually get their shit done. Like they have their roster in place, right? You go back to the first year, which was a different one, right? That was like a totally, you had a blank slate. You're trying to not,
they had to talk to Brunson for 30 seconds before they signed.
Yeah. Yeah. So. But like, if you look at,
that wasn't announced till 6:01.
If you look at 2021, they signed Kemba, they signed Evan, they signed Nerlens, or Nerlens comes back and Burks comes back. And like, they had that shit done very, very quickly. Rose, whatever. The next year, right, they do the trade at the draft, and then they got Brunson and Hartenstein in very, very early in free agency. Last year, they got Dante in very early in free agency, and that was their only move, right? They traded Obi, and they brought in Dante. Those were their only moves in free agency. They got that done quick. This is very different. They are not done. They made a huge move, not just like a, oh, we traded out one first to move this guy
they
in. Went,
if not all they, in, they yeah. pushed a lot of chips in.
They pushed a lot of chips in. And that's why this feels different. And, like, you know, I'll just put my cards on the table. Like, I would not have felt comfortable doing the Bridges trade. I actually don't know how I feel about it now that Hartenstein's gone. It's almost like sometimes I'm like, why did we do that? We should have had like had these picks and then we could use them to get a center. But then I'm like, what fucking center are you getting? Maybe they should work. Maybe they should have just gotten Bridges. We don't know the full picture. So that's part of it.
Şengün and Duren were mentioned as options as well.
I saw that. Berman mentioned that. I'm not giving Berman any fucking, I'm not giving him any time of the day. Fuck him.
Relax, Schwinn. Relax. Yeah.
And like, if look, when you are when you're as good as the Knicks are, getting to that last kind of like 5-10% that you need, it's very hard. Sometimes you have to take risks. Sometimes you have to gamble. I would say the Celtics gambled pretty big on Porzingis. I know that, and like they had the
look. It looks way like a steal, but
yeah. I think that was a gamble on his health. They won the gamble to a certain extent. They also got bailed out a little bit because the way the Dame thing worked, and then they ended up being able to get Drew, I thought was huge for them. I don't know how anybody – I just don't think anybody would feel as strongly about that team, and they wouldn't have been as good if they don't get that Drew piece.
So if you replace Smart with – or Drew with Smart, you don't think they win? I know that wasn't the way the trades work, but I'm curious actually.
I would feel – probably, I mean, it wouldn't have worked that way. That's my point. Like, it would have been like Derek White is starting, and then you're playing Horford at the four, or you're gonna play Pritchard in the starting lineup or something. Like, I don't know. That would have been weird. If you just told me, yeah, Smart for Drew, no, I'd feel fine if Porzingis is there, but that's not how the trades work, so not really that scenario. But like, I don't feel good about any hypothetical Karl Anthony Towns trade. I've not felt good about other things the front office has previously
done. You hated the OG trade.
I did initially, and then after like, you know, 2 minutes of watching him, I was like, yeah, actually, that's fine. I don't know. I think I'll just like give them the benefit of the doubt, and I kind of understand the vision. I still would feel like they need more at the center spot. If you're losing Mitch and losing Randall, I think you, and even if you get like Nick Richards, I think you need something else there. Maybe one of these.
If you get they do the Richards thing, then they probably get Precious back, right? And well,
I think Precious will probably have to go to make the numbers work in a
with
in a
Nick trade. Richards or Cat. Oh, so you're saying if they get Cat and then Richards, sorry.
Yeah. So then it's like, I don't know. I mean, I think they'd still need a center, but I guess what you have to really
think about... What about Ariel Hugporty?
Yeah, maybe him. But if you're the front office, what you really need to think about is it easier for us to get that center versus we believe so strongly in what we already have that we're just going to roll with this? Like, that's... And I don't... It's easy to just be like, run it back. We, like... Randall deserves the opportunity to play with this team, and we're so much well better constructed to kind of give him, like, use him in more versatile ways. I get that. The contract situation thing for me makes it a lot less.
It's also the archetype. How weird the archetype is important for a reason, because it's like, how can you weigh these things? It's like, he's an instant double team. He also gives you nothing on defense. And he is going to be the second biggest player in your starting lineup. I believe he's taller than OG. Probably heavier. So he's not giving you anything on defense, doesn't stretch the floor, but he's a walking double team. You have to make that decision. Could that money be better spent elsewhere? Especially if you're going to be paying as much as Cat anyway. I mean, Cat is objectively a better player than Randall, right? I mean, what does we talked through it?
I go back. I don't think so. I think Randle just has peaks that because he has peaks as an on-ball guy that I've never seen from Cat. I've never seen that. Cat obviously has peaks as a shooter that I've. I mean, I guess we've seen.
And a defender. I've seen Cat play really good defense.
I've seen Randle play really good defense.
I actually think, well, so friend of the pod, Jack Borman, has highlighted that Cat's. Yeah. Well, I've seen Cat.
We'll get his true opinion of Cat if Cat gets traded, though.
That's a good point. Like, for me, you know, I used to think Quickley was a starting franchise point guard, but now, I mean, I like Quickley in his role, but, you know, teams are going to pick him in the playoffs.
Just need to give RJ one more year.
Well, I think that
hopefully, I mean, look, he played really well for Toronto.
I think that has been made Toronto or RJ fans feel vindicated in a way that I'm like, let's pump the brakes there a little bit. But I wonder what question they're trying to answer. Are they trying to answer the question of we just need a long-term center period because Mitch isn't reliable and we lost Hartenstein? Or are they trying to answer the question of Randle? Or are they doing all of this at once? With the question, by the way, of we drafted Tyler Kolek and our best trade asset plays the same position as him. It is just fascinating to there's so many variables in play. I mean, you could build a Jeremy Cohen algorithm, and I think that would struggle to figure it out, to say nothing of Jeremy Cohen himself, who I think is better than any kind of algorithm. So I should say, it's just, there's a lot of variables at play. I think everything you brought up is a concern and things they're thinking about. You know, my
tangled web we weave.
Tangled web we weave. My prediction is still they run it back and bring back Precious. You know, backup point guard is the other thing that people have, you know, if the Kolek thing doesn't work out, Rokas Jokubaitis allegedly is playing summer league. You know, maybe they try that. But I also think that's just, that always has felt like to me the easiest thing to fix. Just get a guy who can run out there and set up the offense for 5 to 10 minutes. And I trust Precious as a backup five. I actually do. I don't trust Sims, so they probably have to add someone else. But I think, you know, so I guess in the base situation, they don't make the Cat trade. They probably still trade for Richards, but they keep Deuce. And so you have true traditional centers when they're healthy. You have the option of Precious when either Mitch is hurt or you're playing Boston. I think Precious should start over or should get minutes over Nick Richards, but obviously not my call. And, but yeah, I mean, it still all comes back to that creation that Randle gives you. Can that be enough in the playoffs? That's because we have the defense around him. We can make moves for bigs, right? Like, even if it costs us Deuce and picks to get Kessler, we can do that. We can put defense around him. We've put defense around him in the perimeter. We put shooting around him. We've put shooting around him on the perimeter. We've got our backcourt, Mark Jackson called the Steph Curry, Clay Jackson backcourt early in their careers. And this is one thing Mark Jackson was right about, the best shooting backcourt of all time. I think we're top five. Brunson and Dante.
I would want to see one more season of this insane.
But last year, they were both Dante.
It was 16. One of the best shooting seasons. Correct.
And Brunson is taking insane difficulty. So as good a shooting backcourt as you could want. Your 3 and 4 guys, Bridges and OG, are lights out from the corners and reliable above the arc.
It's probably the best shooting lineup in the league. Yes.
Yeah. So you've given everything there. Is that enough for Randle to be successful? And if you still believe the playoff Botox face and everything that's happened is still a big thing, and or you believe that not only have you added shooters, you've added guys who can do a little bit off the dribble, do some things. And even Deuce counts there. Even Hart, right? Hart was taking on is it fair to say Hart was the second creator in the playoffs?
I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you what the fuck happened in the playoffs because our team died like every other day.
But I think the guy who I saw doing the most off the dribble, who had some pretty decent results, was Hart. And so you've seen it from Dante. Bridges obviously had the first option role in Brooklyn, wasn't great at it, but you know, his first season certainly showed that capability. So let me ask you this. Can that second option by committee work? Because that also impacts, even if you don't think Randall is conducive to that, would you rather trade him for Cat or eventually trade him for, you know, even on that same team, Jaden McDaniels and another like helpful role player, right? Can that second playmaker, because we got a guy, we got the top dog. Can that second playmaker by committee work? That, I think, to me, is a fascinating question. And how much can that help Randall, even if he's not that guy, be that guy next to Brunson?
I don't know.
I mean, can you think of examples historically? I mean, I don't, for example, Golden State. I don't think Clay is a great second creator. I don't think Draymond is. But, you know, I don't think Iguodala is.
I don't think you need a great second creator, but I do think you need a second guy that...
And you cannot replace that in the aggregate.
Yeah, I just think you need a second guy that defenses tilt towards. Like Randall, I don't know if Randall can be the second creator on a lot of great teams, but I think there's reasons for optimism why he could do it on this team. I don't know that Cat can be the second creator on a lot of teams, but I think if you put him next to a guy who can create at the usage that Brunson can, then he's interesting.
Are we seeing that right now with him and Ant, though? Like, do you think there's a reason to believe this would work better?
Ant's nowhere close to Brunson offensively right now. Like, that's not even close.
I agree, but I don't think that's the consensus
opinion. Yeah, because the consensus is stupid. So fuck the consensus.
Ant was in a movie too. So
that's I mean, look, people want to. If you want to say Ant's a better talent or asset or whatever, fine. Have a blast. But like, that's not the same thing. Cat is something different than what the Knicks have had at the four and definitely at the five since Kristaps, right? Like, we haven't had a player like that at that position. And there aren't many
what's his name? Luke Cornett.
Yeah, not going to do that. But there aren't the problem with finding these guys is there's not many of them. There are not many guys who can play four and five and are lights out shooters and have passable
on defense. Yeah, is it fair to say Cat is passable on defense?
I would say he has moments of being, he has more moments of like, his aggregate is passable. It's probably the best way to put it. His aggregate is passable. There's not a lot of these guys. And yeah, Cat's flawed. He's fucking immature. He commits stupid fucking fouls. Like, I get all that. And that's why I wouldn't do it. But I am not sitting in there talking about a new contract with Julius Randle. I'm not in there understanding what his demands are. I don't know all that. And leaving that aside, I think the basketball fit thing, it can go either way. There are plenty of people that would tell you Cat's better than Randle, right? Like you would say Cat's better than Randle offensively, right?
Yeah. I think he's a better passer too, which I don't think we've talked. Like, that's, I think, is something we didn't talk about, but like, is Cat a better processor? My like initial impression is yes, but also I have hyper focused on Julius's bad processing, and
I think the best way to put that would
be Jack Borman on Cat. Yeah.
So. I think the best way to put that would be that you would not be making this trade for improved processing. Let's just put it that way.
So it's like comparing Paulie and Jackie Jr. in a game of Scrabble.
Yeah. Paulie would win, but not because of his process. But like, the shooting is real, and I keep going back to this, but I think it matters. Like, the context we saw Brunson in after Randall, where you had to put, there were always like, you know, especially once they started starting, once Deuce got in the starting lineup instead of Precious, it was like every lineup had shooters or guys who could theoretically shoot, perimeter oriented players, let's call them, from 2 to 4, right? Brunson, two to four perimeter oriented guys. You know, pick your bunch, be it you know, Bogdanovich, who's not obviously now in Brooklyn, OG, Hart, Dante, Deuce, right? Those were your laps, and then Burks came back at the very end. But whatever, leaving him aside, those were five guys. We saw that, and then we saw that with the center. In this case, Hartenstein obviously being a very, very different center from Mitchell Robinson, who would be gone in this hypothetical scenario where we trade for Cat. And in this scenario, it would be Nick Richards, right?
But we saw it with Precious, too, and it
worked. Yeah, we did see it. So we saw how that looked, but we never, never saw a true five-out look at any point in the playoffs or at any point really in the season. And
that's what Brunson played with a lot. If you remember, when we first signed Brunson, that was a concern a lot of people had, right? Like, he played five out in Dallas. Will that work with Mitch, right? So,
right. And we know, and then
he's great at that. So
yeah, and then you would have to be like if you're making a trade like this, this is a non-negotiable. It has to be, hey, if we are getting this guy, he has got to play the five consistently. That doesn't mean he has to start at the five, doesn't mean he has to finish every game at the five, but that has to be a thing that we use. That's a thing we use every game. That's a look we develop and use every single night. And that is not something we've had available to us. I think gun to his head, Tom Thibodeau would tell you he trusts Cat to play the five way more than he'd ever trust Julius Randle to play the five. I think most people would probably feel that way as well.
I mean, it's the size. Yeah.
And
there's, how many seven footers would you trust Julius Randle to play over? Shangun is not a good
I would say this. I think if you're
Jalen Duren's a horrible defender, I'd trust him at the five.
But if you're worried about rebounding, because you have Cat at the five, like, because you have Josh Hart and you have Dante and you have Bridges, when you go to, you know, if you went to Cat at the five, you could have Brunson, you can have Hart out. If you want to go extra shooting, you know, Brunson, Dante, Bridges, OG, Cat. If you want to go, hey, we need a little bit more rebounding physicality, you could say Brunson, Hart, Bridges, OG, Cat, whatever. But like, those are all just fundamentally.
And Hart becomes more playable in a lot more lineups, yeah. Right? Because you already have a non-shooter. Like, it's tough to play Hart with Mitch, especially with Randle there.
And you're not exposing him on deep. Like, you're not doing, like, we had to do that a little bit last year because it was like, well, we just have to play small because Precious at the four is not working. So it's like, Hart, you're the four now, and Dante and Deuce, you're the two and three.
It's like, contributed to his injury, right?
Right. So. And so, you know, the other part is like, and like, yeah, look, I'm sorry. Like, I think Hart became more effective offensively after Randle went out. I don't think that's necessarily directly tied, but I think it matters because if you're the front office, you made a good point earlier about like, you're not trying to replace these guys individually. And the point for Moneyball, right? You're not trying to replace Johnny Damon or Jason Giambi. You're trying to replace what they are in the aggregate. So like, yeah, Cat isn't exactly Randle. And obviously Josh Hart is not Julius Randle. And neither of those guys is Mitchell Robinson. But does using Hart in these different lineups, does having the ability to go five out, does all this stuff, does that collectively get you to a higher level than what the current dynamic would be if you run it back? I couldn't fucking tell you. And I am very, very happy that I'm not in the front office and potentially would have to make such a decision, because the decision would be, I would be like, I would constantly be saying no, but in the back of my head also be thinking like maybe yes, if Randle wants this money, and like, it's a complex situation. I
hate to quote this person, but your mind's telling you no, but your body's telling you, your body's saying something different. I think this is like the toughest thing to do. That's not to take away from what Leon Rose and company have done, because in 20 years we didn't see anybody do it. But getting a franchise to competence, while not something you toss aside, the hardest step is that next. It feels like an exponential curve in terms of difficulty. To get from 30 to 5 is harder than getting from 5 to 1. And that's the situation they're in now. And sometimes you have to get rid of guys you like a lot. You know, we saw it with, I think Randall's a better player than Pete DeMar DeRozan was.
Oh, yeah.
I actually think DeMar DeRozan has improved a lot. And if you look at his efficiency and his passing, especially.
Very odd career.
He's actually become a lot better offense. Like, I don't think that the idea that he's, you can say that he's not a good defender and he needs the ball, fine. But the idea is that inefficient is just flat out false now. But my point is, when Toronto traded him, he had a longer track record of just not being able to get over the hump. And I think he's just straight out a worse player than Randall. But they did it. And Masai Ujiri got killed. They got Kawhi fucking Leonard for it. A lot of people were upset about that trade in Toronto. Not because, and I think they all implicitly knew the value was good, even if Kawhi didn't resign, because, you know, DeMar is beloved. That's something they have to consider. Like, Randall, I would be sad to see Randall go. If we win a championship without Randall, he was here to build it. That's not a light consideration. I did want to ask this, though. You mentioned that Hart played better after, you know, improved without Randall. Obviously, Brunson improved. How much of that is just them taking more shots versus the context actually helping them be more efficient?
Well, the context is relevant to them having more freedom offensively, which I think is important. Like, when you have
Julius... But Julius isn't constricting the space. That's what
he's not constricting the space, but you're going to drive usage towards him. Like if I play with Michael Jordan, I'm not going to be jacking up bullshit sidestep jumpers. If I play with you, I probably will be. Like, there's a difference.
No, dude, I keep the ball. You sit in the corner and shoot threes, bro. Fuck you.
Yeah, but like, there's a difference, and also like, they're obviously empowered in a way that they would not be next to most players, most star players, like they are with Brunson, because they have such a deep connection with him, right?
So you think Randall being an inherently high usage guy just in itself, I don't want to say is a negative, but has...
No, yeah, not a negative. It's just a reality. Like, if Cat comes here, I promise you Josh Hart is not doing as much in lineups where he plays with Brunson and with him. But I think because Cat spaces out in a different way, like, again, I understand that Randall has gravity. I don't deny that he has gravity. That's obviously very, very real.
But you're talking about a 40%
eight. Yeah, it's different. There's more fucking space out there for sure. And I think if you know, it's like there was this whole thing of like, well, Hartenstein isn't quite giving you five out, but because he can like run these dribble handoffs at the top of the key, defenses have to honor it. So it's kind of giving you something akin to five out. And like, that's cool and all. And I understand that and I agree with it. It's a reason why I think losing him is a big deal. And offensively, I don't love the idea of Randall and Mitch together. And I think it's a big difference from Randall and Hartenstein. That's neither here nor there. But we saw that there's a difference between what Hartenstein five out looks like versus like what Miles Turner five out looks like, or you know, what a Porzingis five out looks like. It's different. It's just different. Like, so you put a guy like Hart in that type of space, yeah, it's different. And it just is. Like, I don't know what else to say other than that, because we can sit here and debate what's gravity and who has more and but like, you know,
how much does that extra gravity? I think this is a debate with Mikal Bridges and Dante, right? Like, if you substitute Mikal Bridges, no one's leaving him open. That extra 3 feet Dante gives you, right? 2 feet, whatever it is, and that volume, what is the incremental impact of that? I think that's kind of the same argument with Cat and Randall, right? At least just in the gravity discussion.
Yes.
And I think it's up for debate how much that matters. Like, is it a binary thing, open or not open, or how much of a gradient there is? In terms of like extreme gravity, like, because Cat isn't just the volume, it's also he can hit from range. I think that's an interesting part of this. It's like, is it binary or is it that much of a gradation that it like Cat versus Randall? Because I still think like the gravity is less meaningful to me than the fact that you just have someone who can have that gravity and like probably be better than Randall on defense.
It's look, I don't think people that are really big believers in Julius have a lot of points they can make in their favor. People that think that he's a playoff dropper and that's never going to get fixed, and you know, they have arguments too. And there are people that are really high on Cat and like really like Cat, and they would have valid arguments also. It's just, I don't think it's straightforward. I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes that is not getting discussed business wise, and business decisions affect on court. Like, it affects how you build your basketball team. That's how it is. Ignoring that doesn't change it. So, you know, even if they did trade for Cat, I don't think it would be purely based on talent either. I think it's definitely coming to a head because of business and the dollars and the cap and the new CBA and all these things. And again, I don't envy the position they're in. We'll see what happens. I agree with what you said earlier, that the smart money is that they just run it back. And that's the smart money, because
run it back would mean Precious.
Bring back Precious.
And maybe trade for Nick Richards or something.
Yeah, something like that. Whatever. Use the taxpayer mid-level on somebody. Fine. But like, that could just be because mechanically it's very, very difficult to pull off. And, or, you know, maybe the valuations, you know, maybe they think Cat's worth X and we think, you know, he's worth Y, and there's no way to bridge that gap because of the asset. Like, look, I think we can safely say that just because, let's say they run it back, right? They don't pursue this trade and it's all bullshit. You know, CP's lying and Beckley's lying and Han's lying. They're all liars. Just because they don't do the trade now doesn't mean they might not revisit it later either. Like, they already did this with OG, right? They couldn't come to an agreement with Toronto for a long, long fucking time until they did. And then they traded for him. Like, so I would say that once you make the Bridges deal, it throws a lot of things into flux. And you're operating, obviously, as a very, like, you've telegraphed now that you view yourself as a contender. In my opinion, you might have thought that before, but this telegraphs it in a way that nothing else they've done has. They 100% are in this now every year to compete for championships. That's what they think. And when you're in that mind frame, nothing is necessarily off the table. And given Randall's contract status and Mitch's injury history, I've thought this since the Bridges deal, and I've kind of maintained it throughout. Like, I'm not closing the door on those guys 100, like, on their, that they could be out. Like, I think there's still, like, even if they don't trade for Cat again, like, maybe there's somebody else we're not thinking about, but I don't feel
they're 100% keeping the options open.
Yeah, I don't feel 100% that those guys are making it through the season. That's probably where the smart money is, but I think there's a very decent chance that neither of them is here whenever the Knicks
2024.
Yeah, that the Knicks 24-25 season concludes.
I have a tough time believing that they would trade. I believe the team is going to be really good. So if by the trade deadline they're winning 67-70, I don't know why I said it's a 2 out of 3. That's why. If they're winning 70% of their games at the trade deadline, which I think is not unrealistic, I don't think they're trading Randall, because he probably will be putting up 20x, 10 plus, 5, right? Like, I would have a, like, whatever the contract situation is, you don't trade that guy midseason when you're winning like that. That would be kind of my pushback on that.
Mitch,
I agree with
you. But you just never know. You never know. Like, they might be like, well, actually, this is the, for now, we definitely don't want to fucking pay this guy 5 years, $375 million, or the fuck he's, like, this is a perfect time to trade him. I don't know either way. I don't think anybody knows. We don't know. We don't fucking know shit. Like, did nobody, 10 minutes before they traded for Bridges, I think the consensus opinion would be like, they're never going to be able to trade for Bridges because he's the net.
Well, I mean, their Fisher reported they had been making those moves. I think others had reported even a month or two before that they were, interested. So these things don't come out of complete left field. But to your point, it's tough to have any certainty there.
I mean, that actually is even more of the point, right? You're getting some smoke that, hey, Cat, maybe, like, they're interested in him. So it's not coming out of nowhere.
What if I had a 22-inch cock? Was that something you might be interested in? the other thing I wanted to ask is, so, you know, let's say, I think what I would add is that I think that the question is, should you run it back because of how good you were in January, or should you keep trying to? I think I've seen people say the same, take the same evidence and say two different things, right? I've seen people say, look how great they were both with Randle and without Randle when, you know, when the Brunson fireball happened. To some people, that means don't, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. To some people, that means, well, this is, you're that close. Now there are no, this is the time to go for broke. And I think to your point, I think there, this has just always been a front office that keeps its options open all the time, and focuses on what matters most. And, you know, as much as I think the mechanics probably make it so that they just bring back Precious and keep their flexibility alive. You know, and in terms of flexibility, I do want to say that people have said, oh my God, they gave up four unprotected firsts, a swap and another pick, five first round picks for a role player. I think it's worth noting, like, the thing is, yes, that's star level in terms of picks, but star trades happen, and you put this in a thread, star trades happen with all the picks and then other players. You get everything, right? Like, let's look at the Donovan Mitchell trade, which was a different environment. I think an environment where a star might be cheaper, but you traded for Donovan Mitchell. They gave up the three unprotected firsts. They also gave up a future all-star in Lauri Markkanen. You can say maybe he wasn't valued quite like that, but he's still a promising player. They have another guy in Colin Sexton who is a fringe starter, pretty good rotation player. And then they gave up their first-round pick from that draft, right? So, you know, we gave up more first-round picks, but we didn't give up. We gave up Bogey. That was it. Bogey would be the worst player in that deal. Well, I would argue that who was that pick? I forget who. Ochai Agbaji. That was who it was. He would have more value than him, right? So I think it's worth noting that they still have flexibility. They still have two other protected firsts. You know, whatever your thoughts on whether they convey, they still have Deuce. They still have a bunch of good contracts. They can still move Dante, who's on a great contract. Randle has value. Mitch has value. And they're keeping all of these options open. And I think it's just more tough to follow as a fan. I think I would think that they're trying to, the sooner they can get themselves that like last step where they feel like, nah, not just we can contend with Boston, but we're confident we can beat them. They would do that. That might be Cat. You know, I think they keep all these paths open. And they're constantly exploring them, and they've built a team that gives them that option, right? They've built guys who can play multiple roles. They've built a team with guys who can play multiple roles, who can plug different holes. Who can, you want to lean into offensive rebounding and defense? You have a team that can do that. If you go five out, you have a team that's suited to that, and guys who can cover for you on defense, right? Yeah. I'll actually ask you this, because this is a comp I made. I know we're close to time, so I'll just ask you this one. So that Chicago team with Lonzo Ball, DeMar DeRozan, you know, LaVine, that first season, like, till Lonzo got hurt, they had a top, I think, five offensive rating. It's because Caruso and Lonzo could cover for three other poor defenders, right? I think the other three looked better on defense, especially LaVine. I thought that was his best defensive season. You know, do you think that's something the Knicks could replicate with Randle, or maybe certainly Cat? And I'll ask this specifically about Randle, if they kept him, do you think Vucevic is that much better of a defender than him? And do you think the fact that Dante is probably a better defender than LaVine matters? I'm curious your thoughts on that analogy. Like a five out lineup with Randle mapping to that Chicago team before everybody got hurt, and they just
I don't know what to make of that team. That team existed for what, like 2 months?
They were really good though. They're really good. They worked on defense, and we have better talent. Brunson is better than anyone on a team.
Yeah, but I think Lonzo and Caruso are really, really underrated defensive players.
But we like are they that much better than, if at all, than Bridges and OG? OG is better.
OG is the best, but I think Bridges is a little bit overrated defensively. Like, I don't think his impact metrics.
You don't think he's as good as Lonzo?
Lonzo was really good on defense in New
Zealand. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just
like I would have to go back and honestly look at it, but like, it was weird too. I mean, they were just a weird team, and
but that's kind of the dynamic that would exist, right? Like, some bad defenders and a couple of really good wings covering for them, and on offense, you just smoke teams, right? Because you have a ton of guys who can score.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird with Randall. It's weird with, we don't know who the center is right now. Like that, well, we know, so it's
Mitch. I'm comparing a five out Randall lineup to the Vucevic.
Right, but their natural lineup was five out. Our natural lineup right now would not be five out. So it's just a totally different dynamic.
Yeah, I'm just talking about because that lineup worked, is there a reason to infer that the Randall at the five lineup can work or is more viable?
Maybe. I don't have a great answer for that. It's just like, I don't know how it's comparable. I think our teams are built different. That team pushed the pace better because they had Lonzo.
Well, I mean, DiVincenzo and Hart are pretty good.
They don't push the pace like that. No shot. No, Lonzo. Lonzo was crazy in transition. But like, it's possible. I don't know for sure. And that, again, this is the bet you'd have to be making, is that, well, that it unlocks this option. And if that's the case, then yeah, the Knicks should, if they feel that way, they should fucking probably just sign Precious and be done with it. The fact they haven't.
Well, also that could tell you that if it works with Randall, it sure as fuck will work with Cat, right? So
potentially. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. All right. We've talked enough about Cat. We actually talked about nothing else. That's awesome. I like that. I'm happy about it. Johnny Bryant left. I don't really care. All right. Stacey, let's move where they can find you and plug anything you want to plug.
StaceyPad99. You can find me on Twitter. X, whatever you want to call it, and I'll plug all the great work we're doing with Strickland.
Awesome. I will also reiterate that. Check out all the wonderful work that's been doing with Strickland. Check out the articles that Matt has been pumping out and Desmond. They've been doing really great work. Drew also had a great piece. We've got a lot of great written content.
Who's Drew?
Andrew Steele. You might know him. Douglas. But yeah, we've got a lot of good written content. I haven't produced any of it, but these guys have been putting out a lot of work, so definitely check it out. Really informative stuff. All right, thank you to everybody that listened today. Thank you to our sponsor BetOnline. That is our show for this evening, and I will see you on Friday.